Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And this month, we are going to be talking about Patreon. This is a marketing episode, and way back in, I think, June or May, when we told you we'd be cutting down to one a month, we'd be only doing craft discussions. That is still the plan. That was the plan then. These are just episodes that we had already been working on and developing, and so we're just kind of fleshing these out. This is the last one, and after this, it's just all craft content going forward. We're going to be talking about Patreon, this episode, just based on we had those three interviews, then we've done a bunch of research as well. So we're going to kind of be presenting all of that in just a really compact, tight version of an episode here for you today. So let's go into this month in critiques. So this actually came from my live, writing group, and the woman was reading her work, because in my live group, the author reads the work out loud, and then everybody follows along and kind of critiques it. I know there are various methods, but that's what we do. And what happened was, as she was reading it, she came to this section, and she changed her voice fairly dramatically as she presented this little part that she was reading, and then she went back to her normal voice. And I pointed out, you read that in a very specific voice that portrayed very much emotionally how you feel about that, but there is nothing in the manuscript that tells the reader approach it that way, and you need to put that in there.
Yeah.
And so there's a very common piece of writing advice, which is read your manuscript out loud. And I think we've mentioned before that when I prepare my beta draft, I record it as an audiobook. And that is definitely something I watch for when I re-listen to it, is did I do a voice that is not in the actual text itself? Is there nothing in the text that tells the reader, approach this dialogue this way? And so just something to watch for in your own manuscripts is that if you read it with a voice, are you telling the reader to do that voice in their head?
Yeah. Not everybody's Jim Dale. This is just a small thing I notice. I unfortunately haven't read a lot of fiction lately, so I don't have a lot of sources to draw on. But I saw Jurassic World, and you've probably seen in the previews that there's like a volcano that's going off on the island. And I just noticed that movie had like some really great sets. Like, so the volcano goes off and there's like chunks of fire. Fiery lava falling from the sky, and it just looks awesome. But and there are several different elements like this that just visually look super cool. But I just noticed that those were not enough to carry the movie. Like, it needed stronger plot, and even more importantly, stronger characterization. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that movie's getting fairly mediocre reviews. And so in spite of these like visual strengths, it's just not enough. And actually, I've been trying really hard in every single chapter I write to be make a memorable setting, like make the setting matter. So I try to put it in a place that matters. We've talked about this in former episodes. So I think that's really important. But I just noticed watching Jurassic Park that's certainly not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're only going to nail one thing, you should nail that plot. Two, nail the character. And then if you can get to the setting, and that's going to like knock it out of the park for you.
Okay. So on to our discussion. So first, let's cover very briefly for those of you who don't know. So Patreon is a site and a platform that allows creators to kind of interact very directly with their fans, and then allows their fans to contribute directly to the creators. So this all kind of starts with the Kickstarter movement. So we'll go way back to a TED Talk by Amanda Palmer. And she was a musician. She'd put out an album. They built kind of a fan base. They were doing some light touring and stuff like this. And they were getting ready to put out the next album. And the label was like, no, we just don't think there's a big enough audience for it. So then she went out and found all of the fans. And she got them to kind of come together and produce the album themselves. And then they would all just get a copy. And out of this kind of came the Kickstarter Patreon movement, where the fans themselves could do the early investment of the product to make sure that it gets made, because it's something they want. So we had Kickstarter, right? So you'd put up your project, you get people to donate, you know, and then you make the product because they've invested in it. And a lot of times, like, one of the tiers was just the product. And that was, like, usually your biggest tier. And so essentially people were buying the product and you were making your profits before you even finished making it, and you were able to use that to make the product, right?
So I launched Song of Locke on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And it was cool to, like, set up those tiers. And it's also been cool. I feel like those fans, because they invested as it was being created, they just seem like really strong fans. And it's cool, like, having that network.
Yeah. So Patreon is like that, except it's more of a monthly subscription as opposed to a one-off like Kickstarter.
So can you pay a one-off on Patreon, or is that
no? But what you could do is you could sign up, pay, and then cancel.
Okay.
Right. There's not a one-off sign-up option. It's always subscription, but you can cancel whenever. So if you just cancel after that you've been charged, then it just is the one-off. So that's kind of where it started in the idea here, is that people as a group will pay you, and then that can fund your work. Right. And so it is a subscription model, so it's just a monthly thing that come in.
Yeah, so I've seen YouTubers, a few video essayists, do Patreon, and they'll do their call. I've never felt like I was quite maybe a central enough fan to subscribe, but anyway, I don't know if you've done any Patreon.
So I'm planning to launch one.
Okay.
But I'm so we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'm going to be starting my trial this month.
Oh,
awesome. So Patreon will not actually launch. What I'll do is I'll set up the tiers and everything, and just have everything planned out, and then I'll see what it's like to fulfill those commitments in just kind of the hypothetical realm before I have to literally fulfill them in real life.
Oh, yeah.
And so just kind of see how that works. So like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit more later.
I'm excited.
But yeah, so what you're going to do is with Patreon, you will have these reward tiers. And these are the subscriptions that people sign up for. It's $1. And for $1, you get this reward. And for $3, you get this reward. Like I said, very much like Kickstarter, only you're looking at a subscription model as opposed to a one-off. So from that, so the basic setup here is pretty much anyone using Patreon says the very first thing you need to have is a vlog, which is just the opening video that kind of talks about what you're doing and why you're doing it and who you are, and just kind of an introduction to you and what you're creating and why they would be interested in it. The second thing you're going to do is you're going to want to fill out your profile. Now, fill it out like a writer. Okay, when I was quarrying years ago with agents and I was reading it about how to quarry, one of the things they said is treat everything like a writing sample, right? From your introductory letter to any communication you have with them, see it as a writing sample. And that's very much how you're going to want to approach building this profile. You're a writer. Intrigue them about you, right? You know, you are familiar with character arcs and how a certain character connects to a specific story to heighten that, right? We've talked about Harry Potter in the past. Like, Harry Potter was not the perfect one to fight Voldemort because he was the boy who lived. Harry Potter was the perfect one to fight Voldemort because he was so exposed to injustices in the Dursley home. These were the rules, and the rules were unjust. So that when he encounters the wizarding world with their rules about not talking about Voldemort and everything, he doesn't care. Hmm. And that is why Harry is perfect. Because he sees so many rules as ridiculous when they are in the grown-up world. Because he grows up in a house where the rules are ridiculous. And there's no reason to follow them. So when people say, you can't talk about that, he says, why not? That's a dumb rule. And he doesn't care. And that allows him to investigate and discover and find out what Voldemort is up to.
That's cool.
So, but yeah, and so you're a writer. Tell me what it is about you that makes you the perfect character to be this storyteller of your stories, right? Treat it as a writing sample. You're the character. Build that plot around yourself that fits perfectly there.
Just a quick question about the vlog. Did you notice an ideal length? I mean,
they're usually short. Like, you're going to use, like, standard, yeah, between 2 and 3 minutes
yeah,
is okay. About what you want there. It's YouTube length there. And then follow a few other authors, particularly if they're writing in your genre, and see what kind of content they're releasing, how often they're releasing, to just get a feel for what they're doing. So this is a fiction writer. She's writing fantasy books, but she's doing very well. Her name is N.K. Jemison, and she's writing fiction there. And so you can kind of see how often she releases. You can see what she's doing for reward tiers and what appeals to you. But the point is that she's successful at this. She's kind of figured out a pattern and how to do it and to really make it work for her. And so what you'll want to do is look for writers who are doing what you're trying to do and see what they're doing and why. And, you know, pick up success tips just by following them and seeing what they're doing.
And she has some great book covers. Those are sweet.
You can't be successful without one now. So what you need to plan to make it work is you need to know what your tiers are going to be. You need to know how you're going to grow your audience, and you need to know how you're going to manage retention. And we're going to talk about those three things right now. So first, building your tiers. So the first rule, I think, is in everything is you've got to keep it as simple as possible, right? So you have to consider that with every tier you build, it's going to impact your time management. You also have to consider what is the value to the patron. If they are following you because they like your books and your writing, then your rewards need to be geared that way. As we were talking to Thorn Coyle, she had mentioned she saw some people who, like, they would write thank you notes each month to their patrons. And she's like, that's a ton of time you're not writing, and they're here for the writing. You know, like, that's nice, but at the same time, you're not producing the one thing that brought them here in the first place because so much time is going into these personal thank you notes.
Hey, so I have this vague recollection of someone saying that when you pay someone for like a blood drive, you actually have volunteers go down.
Right.
Because like the intrinsic reward of voluntarily giving blood. Does that principle relate here where like if they're eager to just freely support you, if you suddenly give them an incentive back, does that like disincentivize them because you're taking away the intrinsic part?
Well, if you look at the reward tiers, every Patreon has the $1 tier where there's not actually a reward for it. There's just a general thank you and you can just support here.
Okay.
Right? Sometimes they'll even have a second tier that's the same thing, right? Just you want to donate more. And so that allows for that element to exist, the $1, the $3, just I'm here to support you. Do what you're doing because I think it's awesome, right? Beyond that, then there starts to be rewards and incentives for the bigger donations.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Huh.
One of the things that was mentioned just as Patreon has gone through its data, looked at campaigns that are successful, is there's more than two tiers. So it's not just your big and your little. You've got some stuff kind of sprinkled in between. So that's going to be something to consider. But also we'll talk about what's called the decoy effect. Right. And so the decoy effect is a concept in psychology where essentially if you offer somebody a Pepsi or a Coke and they pick Coke and you say, wait, would you also consider having a Sprite? And they say, no, I'll have the Pepsi instead. Right. That's what it sounds totally ridiculous, but let me walk you through it because it's a fascinating concept and it's relative to developing your tiers. Right, because they found that if you pick the right decoy, it will change the choices people make.
That's so weird.
It's so weird. So consider that you're going to buy a car, right? And we'll give things like kind of a number scale, right? So you've got the choice between two cars. One gets 34 miles to the gallon, and the ride is about a 70, right? It's not a great ride. It's not a super nice car, but it's very fuel efficient. The other car is about a 90 on the ride, but it gets 28 miles to the gallon, right? And so you're considering going with the cheaper of the two. And then the salesman's like, well, consider this third car. The ride is 100. It's getting 18 miles to the gallon and is far more expensive than the other two. Well, now the car that was the nicer of the two cars is now the in-between choice. It's the middle. It's not it's not the luxury car anymore. It's the average. It's the middle, right? Mm. So now the car that was the cheaper of the two is now the cheap choice. So the decoy, you were never intended to buy that third option. It was there to change the way you perceived the other two choices.
Wait, so how does that work with Sprite?
So, well, that's kind of a ridiculous example, right?
Okay.
But to just catch people's attention. I'm a writer.
Well, it worked.
And so part of building these bigger reward tiers is essentially creating that kind of decoy effect. You know, you see the $50 tier, like, that's too much for me. But seeing it may change the way you view the other tiers in between. How do you view the $20 tier now that it's not the top tier, right? Is that more like, well, I could do that. It's not a huge amount. Okay. So it kind of changes the way people view the other tiers that you're offering them just because you have that big end tier. So that's the decoy effect, and that's what it has to do with building your tiers on Patreon.
Yeah,
so let's go back to time management and developing these tiers, because this is a very big part. So with every tier you develop, you need to consider how much time is it going to take to fulfill this each month, because as it is a subscription model for the people who support you, it also means it's a fulfillment monthly for you as a creator, right? You've got to be releasing this. So early access tiers are great because that changes nothing in your creation, right? You just give it to these people sooner, right? It's a great way to build a tier that doesn't actually demand any time other than the uploading to Patreon, right? Very short and simple.
How early would that be?
That depends. So usually it's like a month early, like they get it a month early. Now consider this. A lot of authors want to leverage the pre-order option on Amazon because once you release on Amazon, you get like a 3-month bump in where you are as far as just appearing on people's pages. Huh. Pre-orders can go for 3 months and that's a different bump. And so you can get a 6-month bump if you go 3 months pre-order and then the next 3 months on Amazon. So you can really get quite a bit of boost for quite a bit of time there. The problem is if you miss your pre-order date, Amazon hits you with some pretty hefty penalties. They are not happy about that at all. So what a lot of writers who use pre-order will do is they actually have a finished manuscript ready to go when they launch pre-order. And then it's just ready to go when it switches over to regular order.
Man, that would take a lot of patience, a lot of self-control.
Well, usually what they're not doing, they're not waiting the full 3 months. They do it a month early pre-order or 2 weeks early pre-order. Or if you're staggering a trilogy, it's like a week of pre-order, right?
Okay.
Huh. But if you're doing that, if you're setting up your pre-orders for Amazon, then essentially you've got early access to the book for the patrons because it's done, it's ready to go. You're just leveraging pre-order on Amazon. So like I said, early access is a great way to go. And a lot of times, you know, you're ready for that. So maybe the manuscript is finished, but you haven't settled on the cover yet. You're still designing and developing that. Again, that's just an early access period for anyone following you on Patreon. Extra content. This has an appeal to patrons, particularly who are really big fans of your work, because it's something else. You know, it's not something they get if they just wait. Like, they have to be a patron to be able to get this. So Tim Grawl, in his book, Your First 1,000 Copies, talks about the concept of DVD extras. And we've mentioned this before. On the podcast, and essentially that in the creation of a book, you're going to be creating a lot of materials that don't actually go into the book. Maybe you had discarded maps or discarded chapters. You had character journals, you know, all of this stuff. Or there were chapters that were revised heavily that weren't necessarily discarded, but are very different than the original, right? Or maybe even whole characters that were thrown out. There's all of this stuff that you never used in the final creation of the book. And you can release that to your patrons, right, for being at a certain reward tier. They get this extra stuff there. And this is not quite time-free, right? With early release, there's no extra investment. Here, a lot of that stuff is not polished enough to be released, right? It's got grammar errors and all kinds. It's just a mess. And so it will take a little bit of cleanup. So there is a small time investment here in actually preparing these components for release to the general public. So, but it is a good way to go because you're making that stuff anyway, and it's not going to take a lot to prepare and release it. And then finally, we have actual content creation, which is a really big time investment in managing your fulfillments every month. So so we'll talk about why this can be a bigger deal. And so Jenna Morassi, who we talked to, does a 5,000-word critique each month for members of her highest tier. So that's a big time commitment on her part for anyone in that tier. But she says, one, most people who end up in that tier don't stay there. But two, if they like the critiques they get from her, there's enough interaction between her and the person between those critiques that it really converts these people into long-term committed people. They're not here one-off. Usually they'll drop to the lower tiers, but they stick around. I mean, there's people who don't like their critiques and they just never come back. But for the most part, it's this content creation piece that she has is not just about having that big tier. It's about having a place where she converts people into lifelong fans of hers. And then promotion content. So this is content you create that has kind of a dual purpose. It fulfills the tier, but it also promotes what you produce. So Thorne Coyle talked about, well, not even Thorne Coyle, like stickers, like all kinds of brands have stickers that people buy. And this is basically an advertisement for them and their products, right? So Thorne Coyle, what she would do is she would write an article, and it was for the patrons, but the patrons had the power to share it with people they wanted to, and at the end it would just state that this was paid for by patrons. And so,
is that like an email? Share it through email or what?
I don't know the specifics. Okay. But yeah, so she gave the patrons the power to share it with people if they wanted to.
That's sweet.
Yeah, and so it would spread that word of mouth. And that is probably one of the biggest ways she mentioned she was growing her audience, is through people sharing the articles and seeing that they were created by the patrons, saying that, you know, the patrons paid for this and that's why it's here. And so they would then.
Man, I feel like if one of my favorite authors sent me an email and said, I did not put this on my blog, but you're one of my big fans, and if you want to forward this, you can. Yeah. I would love that. I would be so stoked. Like, hey, guys, I'm on the inside. Check out this email. Like, yeah, I think that's an awesome idea.
So, but yeah, and so it's a promotion content that she's produced, and it's semi-exclusive to the patrons, right?
Yeah.
But they can release it to other people being like, hey, I got this. It's not anywhere else. It's just mine.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, and then the final one is author connection. This is fairly common tier. You can sit in with a web conference and ask the author questions and hear them answer other people's questions and different things like that. So imagine if you could pay a certain amount to be in a web conference with J.K. Rowling or George R.R. Martin, right? And just be able to ask them all kinds of things, whether it be about the writing process or about things you're interested in the story. Be like, what happens here? Like, I feel like this story didn't.
Dude, I feel like dropped. If they auctioned tickets to an event like that, those tickets would go for so much money.
Essentially, that's what this is. You may not be that big name author yet, but that's what it is, right? And not only that, but this is part of converting people to be bigger fans. So this is a story I heard. I don't know how true it is, but so the story was about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Like, not when they were just starting, but they were just starting to get a little bit bigger, where they weren't always like the random band at the beginning, the opener. They were, you know, they were a little bit more in the schedule. And so they would go out on stage and they would play with the opening bands, and they would play the opening band song, like these just tiny little bands. They would invite them backstage to hang out with them. You know, they were just very interactive with these new musicians who were just starting their careers. And as one guy said, he says, I was converted then. He says, everywhere I went, I told people how great that band was. He says, essentially, by having that connection with these musicians who were just starting their careers, they were making missionaries for their own music, right? These people just thought Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were the greatest. And they told everyone that, not just as musicians, but as people. And that just helped them spread like wildfire throughout the music industry. So talk about some of the early mistakes that people we've talked to and have read articles about make. And the first one is they make too many tiers and they don't have a good understanding about how much time it will take to fulfill them each month. Every single person I have talked to says this exact same thing. I had too many tiers, and it's just taking up too much time to get it all done.
I did that on Kickstarter, too.
Did you?
you just get all these good ideas. You're like, oh, that could be a tier.
So the question is, you want to consider, what will it be like to fulfill all of these tiers in 6 months? So you've been doing it for 6 months straight, and you're only bringing in $100 a month from your Patreon. What's that going to be like, you know? And so that's something you want to consider. So we talked about like a trial. I'm doing my own trial run right now. And so essentially, I haven't launched Patreon. I've planned it out. And I want to see what is it like to try and fulfill the tiers I'm planning for the next 2 months. And if I'm okay with the time commitment and everything that's going into it, in 2 months, that's when I'll launch the Patreon, because I'll be comfortable with where the tiers are at.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. So recommend doing a trial run, a month or 2 months, whatever you think you need. I want to do two, because the first month you're excited, it's new, you're trying out. Second month it's like, oh, I got to do this again. Round two. So I think a better trial would be 3 months, but I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah.
So. Huh. So then we want to talk about financial development. So the power of the low tiers is that if you look at people who are making money on Patreon, most of them come from the very low tiers, the $1, the $3, the $5. That's where the bulk of money is coming from, because it's such a small amount that people don't even worry about it. They're like, oh, it's just a dollar, you know?
Yeah. 12 bucks a year, that's nothing.
It's nothing, yeah. And so there's a lot of power in these lower tiers. And as much as it's nice to get people doing the big ones, most of people will be down in these lower ones. And a lot of them are mostly interested in just supporting you, right? They're not heavily focused on their rewards. We'll talk about human psychology, and we tend to chunk things. We want to group things, and we will usually go with natural groupings that exist within the world. And so when it comes to money, these are usually divided by currency, right? There's a $1 bill, there's a $5 bill, there's a $10 bill. And because of these natural groupings within currency, we then view changes in those denominations and having different values. There's, for most people, there's not a different value between $1 and $3. It's just little.
Well, so but does that mean you should not have a $1 tier and do have a $3 tier?
No, have both.
Oh.
Right? But at $5, people start to think differently. And at $10, they'll start to think differently. And at $20, because the currency chunks that way.
Yeah.
And so it just creates these just natural psychological chunking groups. And so, you know, the $3, I think, like, when I've seen a lot of patrons who don't have a $3 tier. I think the $3 tier is brilliant. Because psychologically, it's no different than $1, but you are making triple the income, right? I think you should still have both, you know, and most people will opt in for the one over the three, but you'll get people at the three tier. And psychologically, they'll stick around forever because it's no different in their brains than the one.
Yeah. Huh. Wow.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, some good tiers are not necessarily, like, because we chunk that way, people create, they're like the $1 tier, the $5 tier, the $10 tier, the $20 tier. But tiers in between those are very powerful because you make more money and that people view it psychologically the same. The $5 tier, the $7 tier, right? Where's the $15 tier? Because that's, or the $14 tier, because that's still seen as a $10 chunking in the brain. We haven't hit that different currency yet. So most of patrons are developing their tiers based around that own chunking, where, and you're losing the advantage of those in-betweens where people still view it as that lower cost, but are you're making a larger profit. So just something to consider as you're developing your tiers. So we've talked about this kind of already, but in these higher tiers where you're interacting with people directly, that's, you're usually, like I said, most of the money usually comes from the lower tiers. These higher tiers, while you may get these bigger chunks of commitment, usually the people don't stick around long term. So those are more about converting people to be super fans. They'll drop down to the lower tiers and stick around, but that's, you really want to leverage those to convert people to be your really diehard fans. And finally, remember why they are here. That if you are a writer, they're here because, above all, they want your writing. They want to read your short stories or your books. So don't create tiers that are taking away large chunks of time from your writing, because at the end of the day, they're getting less of the thing they really want, which is the next book, the next story.
So I looked on this N.K. Jemisin page, and it looks like at a certain tier, you get her books when they're released. Yes. Like, she'll send those to you. But they're paying monthly. I'm not sure I understand how that works. So, like, if I release in January, someone paid for the January month, the $25 tier, I send them the book. But if another guy signed up the next month, I guess I send them the previous book? Or, like, how does that work when you're releasing much less regularly than the monthly? Often they're paid.
Because it's not just that, it's everything above that as well, right? That's usually how the tier works. So if she's got early access stuff in there, if she's got
Patreon. Well, you're saying this other stuff will be monthly? So your book release won't be monthly, but this other stuff you can
yeah.
give them.
Yeah, the DVD extras are going to be monthly.
Yeah, okay.
So you're going to have stuff that you're going to release monthly, because they're subscribing monthly, there needs to be content monthly. Right.
You can't change off of a monthly tier, can you? Like,
I would want to
do it yearly. Like, if you pay $25 in 2018,
you get all
this
the
is
books.
What I'm giving you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't know. I've never had anyone pose that question. So I guess if we dug around on Patreon, we would find out. Yes or no? Start digging. yeah.
So it looks like you do not have the option to charge someone yearly, but you can charge them per creation if you want. And that seems like, if the power of Patreon is the person who's paying a dollar every month, and you get a lot of those people, you don't want them paying you a dollar per creation, because that just drastically reduces.
So, your concern is that if the reward tier here is they get the book, and they're paying that monthly, but you're only releasing two books a year, what is the strong motivation for that tier? So, and I said, well, you get everything before that, so hopefully there's some early access stuff in there and some Patreon exclusive content in there that we talked about, DVD extras and all that, and then you get the books when they're released.
I guess I'm just concerned about being fair with and not fair according to Patreon rules, but just fair as in, like, treating them right. Because, like, say your book comes out in December and one guy paid all the way up until November. He's paid every month until November, and then he quit. Like, I feel like, dang, this guy really contributed. And then another guy signs up only in December, and I only give that guy the book?
Well, but, I mean, they know what they're getting when they sign up. If they're not okay with the terms of that reward tier, they won't sign up for it.
Yeah.
You know, there are multiple options, and they can kind of pick the one that they're okay with financially and that they're okay with the rewards. So.
Cool.
Okay, so how to grow your audience. So we covered several techniques about growing your audience just in the way you design your tiers, right? Patreon exclusives, content that's shared by them, or like sometimes the early access content is then released and then you put at the bottom, you know, this was made possible by my patrons. And, you know, just putting that piece of, and, you know, visit the Patreon page, I'm supported by patrons. People who really like your stuff will then go there sometimes to see just what else you've done. And, you know, maybe some of them subscribe. So making sure that you're attributing everything to your patrons, right? Thanking them and linking back to it whether you're writing articles, short stories, or just put it at the back of your books. Only your really diehard fans will read all the stuff we authors put at the back of books, because we put all kinds of stuff back there, and a lot of people never see it. They read the end, and then they close the book, and they walk away. But there's stuff beyond that, as every author knows. We put in epilogues, and we put in notes, or, you know, I've heard of one fantasy author who just kind of wrote about his life, his real life, like for a couple pages at the back of the book. And if you wanted, you can kind of read about how his I guess, a couple months during his writing of the book went at his ranch, you know? Like, it was just there.
That's sweet.
So there's all kinds of stuff we authors put there, but only the really, really invested fans will turn those pages. You know, they read your book and they're like, eh, it was okay. They're not going to keep flipping, but they're like, that was amazing. What else is in here? You know, they'll flip a few more pages and see what else you've put in there.
Like, they want so badly for it to not be over.
Yes.
They're not going to leave.
They don't want it to be over.
Not a single page unturned.
So, yeah. So make sure you put it there in your books. Free books, as Jay mentioned, you know, one of the tiers was they give away their books. A lot of authors do give away their books through Patreon. You know, so, like, we talked to one author, and she was, I think each month at a certain tier, you got a book for free, and then, you know, eventually you would catch up and have all her books, right? So giving away books is a pretty common one. Some people will come to Patreon because they can get the books cheaper than Amazon through, like, the subscription model, right? So let's say the books are $6.99 on Amazon, but at the $5 tier, they get a digital book each month. Eventually, they catch up on your library, and maybe they just stick around, right? So that's one way there is just, you know, if you're giving away books, technically it's a giveaway, so you're not interfering with whatever regulations you have with Amazon. You're not selling them through Patreon. But then it's a good way for people to just kind of be like, oh, I'll just stick around, see what else is coming out. Right?
That's cool.
Of course, you want to mention it on all your social media and not just once. You need to, as your social media grows, mention it again and again to the new people. And, you know, talk about the stuff being developed there, right? As you release an update to Patreon, release that update to your social media so they know what's going on. If there's something that interests them, they can go check it out. And then there's always the concept of everyone is doing it, right? This is the whole bandwagon thing. It's a real thing in psychology, though. If a lot of people are doing something, it generates interest, right? I mean, that's the whole concept behind viral and the internet. Everyone's watching this video. Everybody's reading this tweet. And suddenly, everyone else does it too, right? And so as you're launching, be sure to talk to friends and family and get them to sign up for just that $1 tier just so that when other people come there, there's already patrons there, you know, and just say, hey, just stick around for a month or two and then you can bow out. But just so I've got a couple numbers when people come in, so they're not the first or the second. Right. And then giveaways is a pretty much standard technique in internet marketing today. Right. To grow any audience. I'm not going to go into a lot of in-depth here. Our episode on Insta Freebie very much covers how to handle a giveaway. So if you're curious about that, you can either read that article or check out that episode. So the next thing you want to look at is retention. And from everything I've read and all the authors we've talked to, retention is not actually something you really focus on, but rather it's built into the tiers themselves. If the rewards are what the audience wants, they will stick around. And if they are not, they will eventually move on. So particularly in your early months, you want to be looking at the data on all of your tiers. Where are you losing people? Where are you keeping? And when people leave, do they leave completely or do they just shift to a different tier? And in identifying those tiers that have that high retention, you'll want to build on those concepts. So you want to make sure you're posting at least 3 times a month. This doesn't necessarily mean you're releasing new content. But maybe, you know, you've got your DVD extras that come out 1 month. Then you've got, early release chapters coming out another week. And then the other week you just release kind of an update. This is what's going on and everything. So it doesn't always have to be content. Sometimes it can just be an update on where you're at in the creation process. So, and as I mentioned earlier, you can release these updates to social media as well, just so people can kind of see what's going on. So this was a great quote that I read, it was about Patreon, the guy said, start a Patreon because you don't know what will happen until you do, right? It could take off, or it could just be a decent addition to your income, right? Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen until you launch it, so
You happen to find out from any of the authors that you talked to how their income was split between just regular book sales and Patreon?
I didn't talk to them about what they were doing in there. I mean, I asked them what their other marketing efforts were, but I didn't find out like what income was coming in from them. I know Jenna Morassi does very well. She's got so many reviews, you know she's selling a lot of books. Okay. Just the nature of reviews. Any author, they say, like 1 in 100 books will generate you a review is what they say, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when people are, you know, she's got maybe 300-400 reviews, so it's like she's selling a lot of books.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. I think for her, her main income was actually her YouTube channel.
Oh.
So.
And what kind of content on that?
She talks about writing like us.
So like a YouTube podcast.
Yeah. She's a YouTuber and she just talks about writing craft and whatnot. But she's got like 50,000 subscribers.
Tell me her name again.
Jenna Morassi. So that's the conclusion is start a Patreon because you don't know what will happen until you do. And set up your tiers to support your writing, not get in the way of it. As always, please leave us a review. Tell your writer friends about us. Link to one of your favorite episodes or one of our articles or tweet about an episode you're enjoying right now. If you're listening to one of us, there was a tweet just a few weeks ago and she was listening to Pinch Point and it like solved her plot problems in Act 1.
Yes!
So if you... you can write in with any suggestions you have, comments about what you like or topics you'd like us to cover or go more in depth to. And if you want to support us, check out one of our books. So Jay's got a bunch. I've only got the one.
So, guys, thank you for listening. And it's time to start writing.